The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Ela told us Yitzchok ben Avraham, Avraham holid us Yitzchok. These are the generations of Yitzchok, the son of Avraham. Abraham gave birth to Yitzchok. By Yitzchok ben Arboim Shona, Bekachte es Rivka bas Bisvil Arami Mipan Narom, Achais Lovan Arami Leile Isho. Yitzchok was 40 years old when he took Rivka for a wife. By Yatar Yitzchok Lashem, Lenechach Ishtoi Ki Akorihi. By Yosele Hashem Atar Rivka Ishtoi. And Yitzchok prayed to Hashem, opposite his wife, together with his wife, because she was barren. Akorish Borhu answered him, and Rivka conceived. By Yisreitzatzu Habonim Bikirbo, and the children created a tremendous tribulation within her. And she said that if there's going to be so much pain, so many troubles, so what is this all for? Vatelech lid reishas Hashem. And she went to seek out Hashem to find out what's happening. The Chazal tell us she went to the Beis HaMedrash of Shem. Vayim Hashem lo. And Hashem said to her, Shnei goyim bevitneich. These are not two ordinary children, far from it. These are two nations within you. Ushnei le'umim. And not only two nations, but two empires. Mimei yiporedu. And they are totally contrary to each other. And from your womb, they will separate. One will go in one direction, and the other will go in an opposite direction. And these two empires and these two kingdoms, one will take his strength from the other. That means they will not rule equally. When one will be up, the other will be down. But in the end, the older one will serve the younger one. And the days came to their fullness, and there were twins within her womb. The first one came out Admoni. Rashi tells us Admoni means red, and he had like a garment of hair all over him. And they called him Esav, and afterwards his brother came out, and his hand was holding the heel of Esav, and his name was called Yaakov, from the word heel. And Yitzchok was then 60 years old. And the two lads grew up. And Esav was a man of the hunt, a man of the field. Yaakov ishtom yeshev ole. Yaakov was a man of temimus, uprightness, trust, who dwelled in the tents. Vayav Yitzchok es Esav kitzayid befiv, and Yitzchok loved Esav because tzayid befiv. He would bring his hunting to Yitzchok, to his mouth. Rivka eves es Yaakov, and Rivka loved Yaakov. Last year we gave a long shir on Yaakov and Esav, and we went into basically the qualities of Esav and what consequence this has, and also to explain the brochas, the giving of the brachas, which are in this parsha, why Yitzchok chose to give the brachas to Esav. Rivka, on the other hand, she saved the day and managed to obtain the brachas for Yaakov. This year, let us spend more emphasis on the qualities of Yaakov. And those who are interested in the other subject, it's available on the tapes. Now, the Torah tells us Vayigdul ha'norim vayi esav ish yodea tzayid ish sodeh. That when the lads grew up, Esav was a man of the hunt, man of the field. So here it tells us what the qualities were of Esav. What does this mean? So Rashi tells us, Yudea Tzayud, the simple meaning is that he was a man of the hunt, which is true, and he was a man of the field. But a deeper meaning, Lotzul Darama Yisavi Bafif, he was a man of deception. Just like when you hunt, you have to deceive, you have to trap. You go out into the field and you put up some type of trap or some type of decoy in order to deceive the animals. So Esav was a man of deception. And he knew how to hunt and deceive his father through his mouth. For example, Shela Abba Heyach Masri Nesamelech Vesateven. He would ask his father, how do you give Maaser? This, that we have to give a tenth to the Levi. We have to give a tenth away. Do you have to give it also on salt? Is salt also considered food? Is it considered something that grows? Because it's found in the ground, but it doesn't grow from the ground. And Tevin, what about the straw? Is that also considered part of the basic grain? Or maybe not. Ksoverovim shoyim adaktik v'mitzvah, since he was being so particular. So his father thought from here that he's a medaktik v'mitzvahs. He's very particular when it comes to fulfilling mitzvahs. He's a person who's very religious. This is what his father thought of Esav. And this is what it means that he was yodea tzayid ish sodea. He was able to deceive his father and deceive other people. Then Rashi says, ish sodea ke mashmo ish botel v'tzuta. A man of the field. He was a man who spent a lot of time in the field. He had time. And he spent time in recreation, hunting, fishing, and so forth. Yaakov, it states, Ish Tom Yesheva Olim. Yaakov was a man of Tamimus. Rashi says, what does it mean, Tom? Enaboki Bechol Eila. Kilibay Kain Piv. He was not expert in all of this. But his mouth and his heart was one. Mishein Chori for the Rama is Koritan. Someone who's not sharp, he's not clever enough to deceive people, this is called a tam. So Yaakov was not this type of person that could mislead people. The Targum tells us, Givar Shilim. Tam means from the word Shalem. Shalem means complete. And that's also what the word Tam means. Tam usually means when something is complete. Alright? So that's one quality of Yaakov. Ish Tam, he was truthful. He was upright. He was Shalem. Not Echod Bepeh ve'Echod Belev. That he spoke one way with his mouth and his intentions with his heart was something else. This is one quality of Yaakov. Yesheva Olim, then it states that he sat in the tents. What does that mean? Olei shel Shem ve'Olei shel Ever, Rashi tells us. He sat in the tents of Shem and Ever. Shem and Ever, these were the descendants of Noach, the righteous descendants of Noach. And they had learned Torah, and they taught Torah. And Yaakov went to learn by them. The Targum says, Meshamesh Beis Ulfona, Yeshiva Olim, that he learned in a yeshiva. So this is the second quality of Yaakov. That he, the quality of Torah. The Moral in the Guraye asks here, why does it state Oli? A tent. It should say Bais. the house. So this brings out another quality in Yaakov. He didn't place that much hashivas, that much prestige, and that much value on homes. He was satisfied to live in something that would care for his needs and sufficient to build great castles, great palaces. This was not Yaakov's style. Therefore, he was satisfied with all of it. The difference between a tent is something that you live in to satisfy your needs. A bais, a great home, a castle or a palace, this was not Yaakov's style. It was Esau's. Like we went into great length in the years before, that when the Torah tells us that there were two great nations, and not only nations, but empires, these were two of the greatest empires that the world was to be seen, that the world would see. From Yaakov came Israel. From Esau came Edom, which the Torah tells us is the Roman civilization. Remi, one of the descendants of Edom, was Remi. And this was to be one of the strongest and fiercest of all of the empires to dwell upon the earth. And this was the empire which destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash. This is the empire that would, according to the Chazal, control the world until the days of the Mashiach. From the time of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash till the days of the Mashiach. The fact so strong they were that the sages tell us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to subdivide them into many smaller empires, otherwise they would totally destroy the world. This was the great Roman civilization, which was the father of European civilization. From them came many subdivisions of empires, the German Empire, the French Empire, the English Empire, so forth. And this is today Western civilization. So this was Esau. He writes that we see that they place great prestige on great homes. They were aristocrats, like the when the prophecy came to Rivka that there will be two great empires. So Rashi brings the Gemara of Erizora, like Rebbe and Antoninus. Rebbe at that time was the prince of the Jews, not at this time, but later generations. And Antoninus was the prince of the Roman Empire. And they were both very great aristocrats. We know of the aristocratic European civilization. By them a great emphasis was placed on their castles and their palaces and their estates. Yaakov was Yosheva Olim. So this is another quality that the Torah is bringing out, that he dwelled in a tent. And through the generations you find Jews lived in nice homes. But the emphasis on castles and palaces and estates of thousands of acres, this you don't find too much by them. And this was Yesheva Olim, that he was satisfied with enough to provide or to take care of his needs in this world. So that's the third quality. What quality does that represent? That represents that he was not a Baal Eilam Hazeh. He was not a man entirely of this world. But he was more interested in higher things, things above this world. He was not a Baal Eilam Hazeh, he was a Baal Eilam Habo. So these are three qualities that the Torah writes here. Ish Tam, he was upright, and he was one, he was not two-faced, straight. Yeshiv Olim, he dwelled in the tents of Torah, the quality of Torah, and Anohel, that he did not give his entire energies and interests for amassing great material fortunes on this world. Now let's take each of these qualities independently. This that we say that he was not a Baal Eilam Hazeh, not entirely devoted to this world, states that when Rivka came and she said that there was tremendous turbulation going on, so the Chazal asked, what was the turbulation? So Rashi brings they were quarreling with each other and they were fighting over the inheritance of two worlds. Because they were totally contrary with each other, there could be no peace. The womb could not hold both of them, because they were totally contrary. How were they contrary? Each one wanted everything. But Yaakov, he was destined by his nature to be the one that would strive for Olam Haba, for the spiritual world. Esav was destined by his nature to be the one that would strive for Olam Hazeh, the material world. And therefore there was a tremendous quarrel going on. They were opposite. Each one could have wanted both. And this is what caused these straitsitis. This is what caused the tremendous turbulation. And therefore, they were entirely different from each other, and therefore it states, "Mimemayach yiporedu." In the womb, they're together, even though there was no peace because they were totally contrary to each other. Once they come out of the womb, they will both go in different directions. Totally go in different directions. And this is what it states. Vayigdalu anorim, that they grew up, and Rashi explains, once they grew up, because mansha yuktanim, once they were small, we couldn't tell their differences. But once they grew up, then we could see. Zeh pirish lebote bidroshis, v'zeh pirish laveirizot. Yaakov was drawn to the bote bidroshis, to the yeshivas, to study Torah, and Esav was drawn to the idolatry. For this reason, because Esav was destined to become a master of the physical world, the Chizkuni and also the Maral say his reason why he was born first. Why was he born first and Yaakov born second? Because he was closer to the physical world than Yaakov was. Therefore, when it came for birth, there was a greater thrust from Esav to be born first than from Yaakov. And then we see that when he was born, Kader Seir. He was full of hair. So the Chazals tell us, what does this mean? He was very, very mature physically. Wasn't born like normal babies, but was born very, very physically mature. And this is why they called him Esav. Rashi says, why? From the word osu. Completely done. Kfar nigmar venase. He was already completely finished. This also is an indication that of the quality, the material and physical quality in him. Then it states, that he was Abmeini. Now Rashi learns Admoni, that he was red. Rashi learns Simon Shia Shefik Domin. This was a sign that he was going to be someone who would shed innocent blood. The Chizkuni says that Admoni comes from the word Odom, that he was born almost as a man already. Odom is the word a man. Also to denote the physical maturity. Then a little later on in the parsha, it says Vayikra Shmei Edom. They called his name Edom, and this was because of the case with the porridge, that Yaakov was making a lentil porridge and it was red, and Esav came to him and he was famished, and he said, "Give it to me." And they made a deal that he would sell his schus, his firstborn right, he would sell to Yaakov. And therefore, because of this, they called him Edom. The Medrash tells us that in general his quality was Edom. Edom means red. States that the land that was given to him is Edom. And his name is Edom. And his garments were Edom. Seemed they would like red clothing. So why is this? The source of redness in the world comes from the sun. The Midrash tells us the color of the essence of the sun is red. And the sun is the meshel, is the ruler of the physical world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. It says that he gave the memsheles hayom, he gave the rulership to the sun. And since this world is Esav's, and he was to become a master over this world, therefore he identified with the color red. Now, Yaakov was contrary. He was identified with a world above this world, with the spiritual world. He wasn't someone that was going to become lost and sink into the material world, but rather seek greater heights. See greater kedusha, greater sanctity. To seek a greater world, a higher world. And this was Yaakov Avinu. So therefore this quality denotes a shichrur, someone who could free himself from the material world. Not someone who divorced the material world from its spiritual world, like Esav. That's in regards to this quality. Regarding the quality of Ishtam, that he was upright, uprightness. This means truth, yosod, straight. And we said that the Targum brings it was shalem, complete. Now this is contrary to deception. Because the one who deceives, the quality of Esav, this is not a quality of completeness. But this is rather a quality of lechatzoin, of division. If a person deceives, so therefore he's with his mouth he says one thing, and with his heart he thinks another. So he's dividing himself into two. Anytime there's a division, then we're talking about something which is not complete. something which is not one, but rather just a fraction of something, a splinter of something. And that's why someone who's truthful is complete. When he tells you something, he's telling it to you with his complete self. He promises you something, it's a promise with his complete self, with his mouth and with his heart. If a person is a deceiver, he's dividing himself. His mouth speaks one way and his heart means another. Therefore, the word tam, which means sholem, is the opposite of the quality of Esav that was sayed befif, that he was able to deceive his father with his mouth. In English also, the words mean the same. Because when we speak about someone who deceives, so the English word is duplicity. The word duplicity, which comes from the word du, means two. Right? Means what we would call he's two-faced. He's not one. He becomes a double image. This was Esav. Yaakov was tam. Tam means tamimus, where he's one. There was no double image in him. Whatever he said, he meant, and whatever he meant, he said. There's another quality that goes with Tamimus, and that's called Yoshur. Now, these two qualities are closely related. The Maral brings in the Nesivah Tzimimus of Nesivah Salem that we find always these two qualities are mentioned together. In Mishle and in Tilim, for example, in Tilim Chofei Taim V'yeshe Yitzruni Shmo Tom Re'e Yoshur B'chein Harbe. And by Yaakov we find both of these qualities. Ish Tam, and states that Yaakov later on was given the name Yeshurun. He was called Yeshurun, and that comes from the word Yoshur. Both of these words mean that a person goes straight and he doesn't turn to the right or to the left. He goes straight as he should. The difference is, though, is Yoshur is with reason. He reasons out what's the straight path. Tamimus is by nature he goes straight. For example, there are times when we're called on to reason. We have a decision to make. We must make it with good, clear reasoning. So therefore it must be with a yashrus. It must be with a straight, reasonable logic. Not crooked. Like in Yiddish, krum, but gleich. If he deviates to the right or to the left, then no longer is it Yoshur. Just like physically. If you want to draw a line which is straight, it has to be straight. If it deviates to the right or to the left, it's crooked. So this is when a person is called on to reason. We have to make a decision, we have to reason. There are other times when we must walk straight without reason. For example, if things are totally beyond our control. Then it states, Tomim tiyem Hashem Elokecha. Have trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and walk straight. If something's within our control and we can govern its outcome, then it's our obligation to govern its outcome. It's given to us. And we must go Yoshur. If something's not in our control, then we must place our trust in our Kodesh Baruch Hu and go straight. For example, it states that Kilei Nachash B'Yisrael B'yakev v'kesem b'Yisrael. That when it comes to searching out the future for oneself by going to stargazers, say, or using other types of sorceries. So, Yaakov, by Yaakov, we don't find that. The Torah says, Tomim tiyam Hashem alakecho. What comes your way, comes your way. Don't try to seek the futures. Don't try to be too clever. But be Tomim im Hashem alakecho. So there, Tmimus means walk straight with trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Both of these qualities were the qualities of Yaakov Avinu. He was perfectly straight, did not deviate to right or left, and he went with full trust with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to go, then he went. He didn't ask questions. And he didn't seek the Hasidus, try to find out what will be in the future through using other methods, but placed his trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is just the contrary to Esav. Esav was duplicity. And Esav was someone that had no trust. No trust in the Almighty. So that was the second quality. Third quality, Yeshev Olim, that Yaakov sat in the tents of Torah. The quality of Torah is well known to us. We've spoken about that many times before. Where do we see that Yaakov had the quality of Torah? So Rashi and the Chazal bring, that when he ran away from Esav, before going to the house of Lavan, he went to the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Ever. And there he concealed himself for 14 years. And for 14 years he studied. Not only for 14 years, but day and night. It states when on his way to the house of Lavan, and he came to Beis El, to the place where he was going to sleep at night, so it says, Vayishkav v'mokem ahu, there he laid down. But for the 14 years that he studied in the yeshiva Beis Shem Ve'Ever, he never lay down. He slept on his sefer. But to permit himself the luxury of laying down for a night's sleep, this he didn't. That was the first time that he slept in all of this time. So here we see the tremendous qualities of Torah in Yaakov Avinu. This was opposite Esav. Esav was the Ish Sodeh, the man of the hunt. Rashi says Ish Botel. He had plenty of time to waste. He would waste his time, Rashi says, hunting animals, with sporting animals, and the sport of hunting birds. And this we see from his descendants. The European aristocracy was known for their hunting, and for their horses, and for their gambling. Where they had plenty of time to waste, their pursuit of luxury, or the Roman civilization. This was the opposite of Torah, where Yaakov dedicated 14 years day and night in the pursuit of Torah. Now these three qualities that we've mentioned in Yaakov Avinu, this quality that he was a person of a higher world, not lost in this world, and the quality of Torah, and the quality of uprightness and truth, They are all connected. They're all linked together. Why? When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, and when he created man, he created two worlds. It states in the Maaseh Bereishis that he created two worlds. And it states that when he created man, it states Vayitzar with two yuds, Shtei Yetziras. He made man for this world and for the next world. He created a physical world and he created a spiritual world. He created man as a physical man, Ofer min Adama, from the earth, Vayipach Ba'apov Nishmas Chaim, and he gave him a soul from above. So he created a physical man and a spiritual man. These were not two worlds. Just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty himself, is the ultimate of oneness, his creations also are the ultimate of oneness. He did not create two worlds. He did not create two people. He created one. Except the world has an exterior and it has an interior. Just as you find a fruit, so it has its shell, and inside is the fruit. Or you find a person with a garment, so there's the garment, and there's the person inside. Or an animal with fur, there's the exterior and interior. So is it with the creation of the world. The physical world is merely the exterior. The interior of the world, that's the spiritual world. The same with man. This that man is physical, this is the exterior of man, the chitzeni of man. The soul which he blew into his nostrils, this was not another man. This is the penimius, this is the interior man. And together they're one person, they're one entity. There's a Gemara in Masechet Brachos, first perek, where the Gemara says that just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu's b'seiser, af haneshama b'seiser. Just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu dwells in secret and you cannot find him, so does the soul dwell in secret. You cannot find the soul. He's in the person. He's the very interior of the person. Even HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Gemara says, the Almighty, when he exposes himself to this world, sometimes he exposes himself where we can see, and sometimes he's concealed. Sometimes it's a good quality, sometimes it's a quality, it's a type of action that does not look good to us. The Gemara tells us it's all one. To us we cannot always discern that it's one, but it's all one. There's a time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals himself to us with brachos. There's a time of haster aster when HaKadosh Baruch Hu conceals himself as if he's not there. But this is all one. Esav didn't understand this. This principle, which is the greatest principle of the world, that whatever came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mahu Echod, if he is one, and he is perfect, so is everything else one. And this is the deepest principle for a man to understand. This Esav did not understand. He thought that these worlds are totally separate. There's a physical world and there might be another world, but they're totally separate. And therefore he said, when Yaakov offered him the to buy the firstborn right from him, so he answered, he said, I'm going to die. What do I need this first right born for? That's a power of a spiritual power. That's something that's totally different. What do I need it for? Therefore, he attached himself to the physical world, totally divorced from the spiritual world. He attached himself to this world, totally divorced from the world to come. This is what Shlomo HaMelech writes in Keheles. He says that this world is Hevel Havoli. This world is totally empty. It's totally empty and meaningless. What did Shlomo HaMelech mean? Was he coming to downgrade the work of the Almighty when the work of the Almighty is perfect? He was saying that if you take Ein Chodesh Tachas HaShemesh, if you take the world which is beneath the sun and you divorce it from the world which is beyond the sun, the world beneath the sun is this world. That's the physical world. Because the sun, as we mentioned, is the Moshel. He's the ruler of the physical world. If you take that world and you divorce it from anything higher than the sun, anything which is beyond the physical material world, then it's Havel Havoli. It is completely empty and meaningless and worthless. It's not downgrading what HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, because that's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. And this is what Esav took. Esav was drawn to the physical world, divorced and void from any spirituality. And he became master of that world. Now, if this was the quality of Esav, then we can understand why he was a person of exterior means. This duplicity that we find by Esav, this sheker that we find by Esav, all comes from attaching oneself to the physical world, divorced from any spirituality. This that we find, that he was a luxury seeker, or that he was each bottle, all comes from the fact that he was drawn to the physical world, which was void from any spirituality. Yaakov understood differently. Yaakov understood that the great physical world that the Almighty created is merely a garment for a much greater world, is merely a means to come to greater heights. This world is a means how to come to another world. Like the Chazal tell us, in Eilam Hazeh, praise the Eilam Abba. This world is a great entry chamber to a greater palace. This he understood. He understood man. Man is not physical. He's not spiritual. But he's both together. The world is not physical, nor is it spiritual. But it's both together. This Yaakov understood. And therefore Yaakov was one He was not a half a person, he was a whole person. He was ishtam, shalem, lacking nothing. Now we see this stronger. In various chazals, which are mentioned in this parsha and other places. A little later in the parsha, it states, "Vayhi Esav ben Arboim Shona." This is in Posuk Lamed Aleph. Posuk Lamed Aleph Chof Vov. "Vayhi Esav ben Arboim Shona." Vayikach Ishas Yehudis Bas Beri Achiti Ves Bosmas Bas Elen Achiti. Esav was 40 years old, and he took two wives for himself. Why did he take the wives at 40? So Rashi brings Esav Hayonim Shel Lechazir. Esav is compared to a chazir, to a swine. As it states in Tehillim, Yechasemono Chazir Miyar. That the chazir will come to devastate from the forest. This is Esav. Why is Esav compared to a chazir? Because a chazir azeh kishu sheikhi peshet lof of lemaru shanitor. The chazir sits with his hoofs out. Most animals sit with their hoofs in. The chazir sits with his hoofs out. And he wants to say, come, see, I'm tohor. Kachilu geizlim vechem simamarim apsim shirim. So is it with Esav and his children. They steal and they're gangsters. But at the same time, they insist on showing themselves as kshedim, as very honorable people. Kol mem shono hoya esav tzod noshi mitachas yad ba'aleihem. For all 40 years, Esav would tempt and capture other men's wives and take them away from them. Kishoya ben mem, when he was 40 years old, Omar Abba ben mem nosi shafani came. My father was 40 when he married. I also will marry when I'm 40. Because it will give a good image. See, here we see two things. As far as a rosha and a gangster, a crook, an adulterer, and everything else, this was Esav. But at the same time, he was not resigned at all that people should realize this. But he was very adamant that the image that he should have in the world is one of a kosher person, a very honorable person. This is the duplicity we're speaking of. You have certain people, you have certain nations that are reshoim, they're evil, and they don't really care if people think they're evil or not. Not Esav. Esav and his children projected an image of a kosher. They were very religious, honorable, upright people, noble people. But at the same time, they were the ultimate in rishus, the ultimate in evil. Why like the chazir? Because the chazir, the Torah gives us two signs of kashrus in an animal, that it should have split hoofs, and it should chew its cud. Must have both. The chazir has split hoofs, but doesn't chew its cud. So the chazir sits with his hoofs outward. He wants to show everybody, look, I have kosher hoofs. Look, I'm kosher. Yet he's the ultimate in treifus. He's the ultimate in an animal that's not kosher. So is Esav. If we go into this a little deeper, the Medrash tells us that there are four animals that the Torah mentions. The gomal, the camel, and the chazir, and the aranevis, the rabbit, and the shofan, a coney. Three of those animals do not chew their cud. Excuse me. Three of those animals chew their cud, but they do not have split hoofs. The chazir has split hoofs and he doesn't chew his cud. So all of them are treif. Medrash tells us that of these two signs, one is an exterior sign and one's an interior sign. Chewing the cud, that's something that's not too evident. That's an interior sign. Split hoof, that's very evident. In order for an animal to be kosher, you must have both. What is this telling us? To be kosher, you have to be kosher, all the way kosher. It's not enough to look kosher. It's not enough to look kosher to show your split hoofs. But you must be kosher bepenimius also, internally also. Or, it's not enough to be kosher penimius internally also, but you also must be kosher in the exterior. Because this world is not a spiritual world. A malach, an angel, is a spiritual entity. Man is not a malach, he's not an angel. And this world is not a physical world. What is it? It is the complete perfection of both worlds. Therefore, to be kosher, an animal must have exterior signs, split hoofs, and interior signs, where he chooses cud. All of the other animals, they have the interior signs that I mentioned in the Torah. They have the interior signs. But they don't have the exterior signs. That's not Esav. Right. Those right away you can tell they're not kosher. By Esav, it's impossible to tell that he's not kosher. Mibachutz, from outside alone. Because the exterior signs he has, but not the interior signs. And therefore the Chazir puts out his hoofs, and that was Esav. Now why? Because Esav was the Baal Eilam Hazeh. Esav was the master of the physical world, divorced from the spiritual world. The physical world divorced from the spiritual world is an exterior world. And therefore Esav had all of the exterior signs, but none of the interior signs. Therefore Esav Deimelech Hazir. And this is what we saw later on, before, that he would ask his father, how do you give miser and salt, and what do you do with straw? Sover hoyer she medaktik b'mitzvah. His father thought he was a medaktik b'mitzvah. He had all the exterior design. This was Esav. You know, in this, the Roman civilization, they projected a very noble image. The fact is, in schools, people are taught their great contribution to civilization. People are taught their great contribution to law, Roman law, the Roman Senate, their great contribution to humanity. Where they built such wonderful cities and such wonderful aqueducts, water systems, roadway systems. Systems of law and justice. This is the Roman civilization. This was Esav, of which the European civilization followed on their heels. And from there came some of the major religions of the Western culture. This was the image they projected. Unfortunately, schools don't always teach the entire story. The Gemara does. Modern Masechta Avodah Zarah says that when it'll come time to give reward, And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will say, who helped my nation Israel? The nations of the world will be scrambling to the door to receive their reward. The first one that will come will be Rome. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will say, what did you do? He said, look how we helped your nation Israel. We built beautiful cities for them so they could sit and learn Torah. We built beautiful highway systems for them. We built beautiful marketplaces for them. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will say, liars, Rishoyim, the highway systems you built, the Romans were the fathers of the highway systems. Highway systems that we have today, through over land and over water and to the moon, we have highway systems. He says, why did you build highway systems? So you could transport your armies to conquer the world. Kodesh Baruch Hu will tell them, don't give me this baloney that you built highway systems for the sake of humanity. You built highway systems so you could transport your armies to conquer the world. It's interesting, but I heard just recently from a great thinker, that the conquering of the solar system, traveling to the moon, that we've seen in our lifetimes, and many byproducts came from that tremendous research effort. Like the microchip or the bypass. Many humanitarian byproducts that came from that great research undertaking. He told me that the intent was not humanitarianism. The intent was military. The whole emphasis precipitation to conquer the moon was a race between the West and the East to gain military supremacy. This is just what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Rome. You built great marketplaces. This was for reasons of immorality. This was for your own luxuries. If you read a little deeper into the Roman pastimes, you'll see the great arenas that they built, which could hold tens and tens and tens of thousands of people, greater arenas than we have built today, where they would come and witness bloodshed. The Gemara brings, in regards to their social justice, the Gemara brings a case where a man was tried for murder, and he was tried for adultery, and he was tried for another crime, and they convicted him, and then the judge that convicted him turned around to a colleague and told him confidentially that I myself just recently committed all of these same crimes. This was the great social justice of Esav. This is because they took the exterior of the world to project this image, but there was no panimi, there was no interior, and there became this duplicity. The duplicity of the English is well known. How they barricaded Palestine and allowed millions of Jews to be killed in Europe because there was no nation open to them, but at the same time projecting an image of what the great goods they were doing, the great goodness they were doing for the world. And also something to note, that today we live in a world which produces sheker, produces lies, professionally produces lies. The entire media, the entire industry of advertisement, very rarely do you find where they're interested in truth. They're interested in image. Building image today become one of the most powerful industries of the Western culture. Whether it's accurate or not, it's nothing to do with it. But how to present presentation and projection, public relations, this is Asia. The movie industry, where billions of dollars goes into producing something, a fiction, that can look truthful. You can't imagine the professionalism and the money and the energies that go into this, to take something which is fiction and bring it as close as possible to where it will look truthful. This is this world. This is Esav. Another thing we see, states that when Esav went in, when Yaakov went in for the brochas, so it says the big day hamudais. His mother gave him the big day hamudais, the very, very dear, valuable clothing. So Chazal say, what was that? That was Esav's clothing. He put on Esav's clothing in order that his father shouldn't recognize him. What was Esav's clothing doing by Rivka? He didn't live there. He was married. He was a married man. So the Chazal say this clothing was very, very expensive, very valuable, and he didn't trust his wives. This is what Rashi brings. Now, what do you mean Esav didn't trust his wife with his clothing? I mean, could have been the suit that you could buy at the best store, but still he wouldn't trust his wife with it. So now the Chazal tell us, no, we're not talking about the most expensive suit. These were the big day hamudais, which he was chomdei for Nimrod. He killed Nimrod. Nimrod was one of the people that lived in the previous generations. And Nimrod was a king. And Esav killed him for these clothing. And these clothing Nimrod had captured from someone else. And these were the clothing, this was the clothing of Odom HaRishon, of the first man. And that's why they were big day chabudais. We're not talking about an expensive suit. We're talking about the clothing of Odom HaRishon, the first man. And Esav ended up with them. The question is asked, why did Esav end up with them? The answer is Esav became the heir of Odom HaRishon, and Yaakov became the heir of Odom HaRishon. Esav inherited his exterior, his clothing, and Yaakov inherited his nefesh, his soul. Therefore he had this clothing. Another point is brought out, is Esav, the Gemara tells us, was excelled very much in honoring his father and mother. We see he was very close to Yitzchak. Yitzchak loved Esav more than Yaakov. There was a greater bond between Yitzchak and Esav than Yitzchak and Yaakov. And Esav excelled in serving him. The Gemara brings that this was true by Esav. And it states that when Esav used to serve his father, he used to put on his most royal garments. This was the great love and fear that he had for his father. Actually, we could see here because Yaakov was using the big day Hamudas. And the Gemara brings that the Romans also had a great honor for their parents. A lawyer once told me that one of the most hideous crimes that you could commit in Rome was that of killing a parent. Now, why is this so? Maral writes in a place, because if a person is a Baal Eile Mazer, if a person is basically engrossed in the physical world, and he doesn't know of any spiritual world, then he has a very strong bond to his mother and father. An extraordinary bond, an abnormal bond to his father and mother. Why? Because they are his physical parents. They are totally responsible for his being in this world. This was Esav. But if a person has a link to the physical world and the spiritual world, then it states, Shleishishut fi mo'odim. There are three partners in man, a father and a mother, and the Almighty. He has a close link to his parents, but he also has a link to the Almighty. And it states that a person is obligated to honor the Almighty more than his parents. And it states a person is obligated to honor even his Rebbe more than his parents. Why? Because his parents bring him into this world, but the Rebbe that teaches him Torah brings him into the next world. So Yisrael has a balance. They realize that their parents have brought them into this world, but they realize also that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought them into this world. And they realize that the Torah that they learn from the Rebbe will bring them into the next world. So they honor all of them. They spread their honor amongst all of them. But Esav, that was the Baal Eile Mazer from this world alone, and he had no attachment to the spiritual world. Therefore, his entire life was his parents. He couldn't go beyond that. And we see this extraordinary and abnormal link to his parents. Now, Yaakov was the opposite. Yaakov couldn't tolerate a duplicity because everything was won by him. The whole world was Achdus. And everything that Yaakov saw was a mixture of physical and spiritual. And therefore, whatever he had in this world, he was satisfied with it for his needs. But not more. He was Yeshiva Olim. The tent was sufficient for him. He gave his energies and his life for Torah. And he was the Ish Tam. And all of these are linked. Because Torah is the bridge between the two worlds. It states when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, he created the physical world and the spiritual world. The spiritual world he created with the Yud. Because the Yud is a letter which you cannot divide. Which means it was complete. There's a Gemara that tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, cannot tolerate kat hanofim. Flatterers he cannot tolerate. And they will not be Raya Panei Ashkina, they will never see his presence. Why? Because in his name is a Yud. And the Yud is indivisible. And the flatterers are not one but two. Because they speak one way and they mean something else. This was Esav. The Gemara tells us who else cannot a Kodesh Baruch Hu tolerate? States kat shakronim. Those who lie. Because in his name there's a vov.
and the Vav is straight, upright. And those who lie deviate to the right or the left. And this is Esav. And then the Gemara tells us, Kat Leitzonim. A group, the group which scoff at this world, which waste this world, do not use it for purpose, this also HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot tolerate. Because he created this world with a hay, and that's his, a letter in his name. And if this world is used merely for physical purposes, then it's wasted. Or those that scoff at his world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world that he holds very, very important. He doesn't hold that it's hevel havolim, that it's empty. But those who utilize it to become empty, then they're destroying his work. States that the Talmidei Chachomim, through their study of Torah, they build worlds. Esav was destroying worlds. And therefore that group also will never be received by him. So these are the qualities of Yaakov. Ish tam, he was a person who was upright and straight and complete. Yeshev ha'olim, he sat in a tent which was sufficient for him and dedicated himself to Torah. This quality of uprightness and straight, and not to deviate. This was the quality of Yaakov, as it states Yeshurun, Yoshua. This is the quality of Torah. As it states Pekudei Hashem Yeshurim, the Torah is upright. In here lies the secret of growing successful, of being successful in this world. We have the principle that the Chazal tell us that we must always try to find a balanced way. The Mamutza, a middle path, not to the right and not to the left, but a middle path. And this is Tam v'Yoshua. This was the meat of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov was the one who found it. States Avraham really was a little leaning to the right. Yitzchok was really a little leaning to the left. Yaakov took both qualities that he inherited and he found the exact straight path. For that reason it states that Avraham gave birth to a Yitzchok but also to a Yishmael. And Yitzchok gave birth to a Yaakov but also an Esav. But Yaakov, Mitosei Shlema. All of his children. The Chazal tell us were perfect. States HaKadosh Baruch Hu placed his name in all of his children. The task of man on this world, which was the task of Yaakov Avinu, to take both worlds, the physical world and the spiritual world, not divorcing the physical world from the spiritual world, like Esav, and not divorcing the spiritual world from the physical world, but to take both, and not to go to the right or to the left, but seek a perfect way, which is Tam v'Yosher, a perfect balance. You know, we find in general, the more scientists learn about the physical world, the more they find the importance of balance. That what HaKadosh Baruch Hu created must be balanced perfectly. Some of the most important minerals and vitamins they have extracted from foods, and people have taken them And now they're learning that they become dangerous, not only dangerous, but they can even kill a person. Because they're taken out of balance of the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. And this they're discovering all of the time. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's principle. Because he's one and what he created is one. And this was Yaakov Avinu. This was his goalness. This was his greatness. And therefore everything he did was one and it encompassed everything. Esav was duplicity. Esav was exterior. He was the Chazir. And this is what we find in the Parsha, which we'll learn in the coming weeks, that after studying for 14 years in the yeshiva and coming to such levels, Yaakov then had a dream of a ladder. That the ladder was Mutzav Arzo, was on this world and went into the next world. The dream that he had was that he had successfully brought the two worlds together. And therefore he became the Bechir Sheba Oves, the perfection of the Oves for Klal Yisrael. In this Parsha he was called Yaakov Okev, from the heel. But in a later Parsha he's called Yisrael because he rose greater than the heights of angels. The heel is the lowest point of physical man. Higher than the angels is the highest point of the spiritual world. Yaakov encompassed all of it and combined all of it. And this is why a person must constantly seek this path. This path is what we are taught by the Torah. Therefore he was the Ish Tam Yeshiva Olim who sat in the tents of Shem Ve'Ever of Torah. We should be zeicher to live up to our namesake, that we are the Bnei Yaakov, the Bnei Yisrael.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information, or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@yjj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at PO Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.